Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Hi, this is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have a great show for you today. My first guest is Nancy Allen. She's an author for Martingale, and she has written this absolutely incredible book called Triple Play Scrap Quilting. It is so exciting because she wrote, she made like about 1,000 quilts for this book. So I asked Nancy to come on and talk to us about scrap quilting and about her book and all those different things. So welcome to the show, Nancy.
Hi, Pat. I'm happy to be here.
This is a whopping book, 27 quilts. I bet there's more than 27 you made even for this.
I did make a few more that didn't make it into the book because of size. But when you show each quilt three ways, you end up with a lot of quilts.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, triple play, you really do mean triple. You have made every quilt three times. This is incredible. Tell me, why did you decide to write this book? What sort of prompted you?
Well, I found myself unemployed a couple of years ago, and I knew I didn't want to go back to work immediately. So I started spending some serious time in my sewing room and started making quilts made by other people. And after making two or three quilts, I thought, this is crazy. I can design my own quilts and make things that are totally unique. And so I had some fabrics in black, white, and yellow that I wanted to make into a quilt, and it ended up being on the cover of the book.
Oh, my gosh. You know, when you told me that earlier, I thought that is incredible. The first one that you messed around with is on the cover, and it's incredible. What's it called?
It's called Just Around the Corner.
Oh,
naming quilts is not an easy thing to do.
Oh my gosh, believe me. I mean, I know. It's like sometimes I let the author, the publisher, do it. Okay, you name it. You name it this time. These are scrap quilts. Are they purely like pull it blindly out of the bag kind of scrap quilting, or are they a bit more controlled?
Well, I define scrap quilting as a quilt that has lots of fabrics in it, not necessarily made from little bits and pieces, although one strategy is that, and I call that a make-do scrappy quilt. But my other two approaches are to either take a color scheme, like the yellow, black, and white quilt, and I call that planned scrappy, or to use pre-cuts where the fabric designer has already made those choices for you, but you still can put probably 40 different fabrics into a quilt.
Oh,
but
yeah.
They're all scrappy, but they all have like a different look to them and a different strategy for making the quilt.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the planned scrappy because, I'm probably personally more that kind of girl. I sort of want to have a color look to my piece. Is that how you start thinking about it?
That's exactly what prompted that. I make quilts for nieces and nephews when they get married and when they have, children, when they have babies, I want to make baby quilts. And the nice thing is they already have a color scheme in mind when they're planning their wedding or when they're planning their nursery. So I can just pick those fabrics from those colors. But it works.
And how do you approach it? I mean, how do you start pulling out and auditioning for a planned scrappy quilt?
Well, I often start with a background, whether I'm going to just use a light, solid fabric for a background, or I find a background fabric that'll work and, that includes those colors. But I like to find fabrics that include maybe two of the three colors in the quilt, maybe all three of those colors, or maybe just one in different tones and different scales of fabric. So you just, the sky's the limit as long as you limit yourself to those three or four colors that you've picked.
And do you worry about, like, shades? Let's talk about this, Nancy. Like, if you have, let's just pick blue. Blue comes in so many shades. Do you even go so far as to pick, like, more green blues, more reddish blues?
I probably am more likely to stick to the same tone of blue in that case, but not necessarily. If I look at it and they look good next to each other, then I'll use it. As long as it has enough variation as far as scale or value, lightness and darkness.
So, what does your area look like when you start planning a quilt? Is it a huge explosion?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, my sewing room is always kind of an explosion. Who works on just one quilt at a time?
Yeah,
but I do,
exactly.
Yeah, I usually have more fabrics for a quilt than what I'm actually going to end up putting into the quilt.
So how do you decide not to put something in? You know, when, because I know a lot of people have trouble with that. They're like, I love everything. I want it all to go in. But then they're not happy because it looks a bit of a mess. So how do you keep it from being a bit of a mess visually?
Well, typically, I think that the background fabric and the sashing fabric and your borders tend to rein in some of those maybe mismatched choices that you know you don't think you like. And it's funny, sometimes those fabrics that you didn't think you wanted in the quilt are the ones that make it really interesting. They just give enough little pop of color here or there around the quilt that it's the unexpected that makes it a little bit more fun and a little bit more scrappy.
Now, would you ever, now I've done this before, but usually on a pretty big quilt that has a lot of fabric, is that if I'm using blue, let's say use blue again, keep on that theme, I might throw in something that's a little more purpley toned in
sure.
place of where the blues are.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly well. That's probably more my approach in a make-do quilt as opposed to mm-hmm. a planned scrappy
mm-hmm.
quilt.
Mm-hmm.
My planned
okay.
scrappy are probably a little bit more controlled as far as the colors. But my
okay.
make-do scrappy, anything goes. Because my philosophy is if the individual block kind of matches, who mm-hmm. cares if it doesn't match the block on the other side of the quilt?
Mm-hmm.
Your eye really focuses on one block at a time, and then it's right. the borders and the sashing that make it all work.
So on your make-do version, which is really, you know, like blindly just pulling fabric out of the baskets,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's where people get, like, all those little bits that they've saved from, you know, 1972 into the quilt. Do you make a sort of one color that helps pull it together? I mean, do you use a solid or a muslin or, you know, some tone on tone?
Well, I usually will pick, well, not always. Sometimes I will have a background fabric that I'm using in every block, and
mm-hmm.
that definitely does tie it together. But sometimes I will think in terms of three or four fabrics for each block. You know, block one's going to use these three or four, block two's going to use a different
okay.
three or four, and then I let it be, you know, the sashing and the borders that make those, bring that continuity to it.
Ah, okay. Okay.
I like interesting background fabrics, and I don't necessarily want to use the same one in every block.
Yeah, you know, I really like that approach, Nancy, because what that does is gives you a small bite to focus on, doesn't it?
Right. In fact, that's the way I approach it, is I will have stacks of, like, the three or four fabrics in block A and the three or four fabrics in block B. And after I've made those decisions, then I will make the sashing and the border decisions before I even start making the blocks.
Now, when you have all the blocks made, and let's talk about the make-do, because this is where you have, like, probably the more of a challenge for some people, because you've got all kinds of colors
sure.
and all kinds of fabrics. Do you put them up on a design wall and start moving them around to figure out what looks good visually?
Yes, although in my case, it's the design floor. I don't have a wall to do it on. But yes, I do it on the floor. I lay it out, and I think about it for a while, and, you know, maybe it'll sit there for 2 or 3 days as I walk by it, making those choices and moving a block around here or there.
So when you're working on either of these two, like sort of the plan scrappy or the make-do scrappy, which is, you know, everything in the kitchen sink, do you ever go buy fabric for either of those quilts?
Yeah, sometimes you do. Sometimes you just don't have enough yardage for mm-hmm. a border.
Okay.
Certainly, I end up buying for backing, but sometimes, okay. you know, I just don't. My stash is made up of fat quarters and third-yard cuts and scraps. And,
okay.
and, you know, other than that, I have yardage of things that would be great backgrounds. For borders, I often have to go to the fabric store, which is a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, darn, we have to go shopping. That's.
Or I will piece a border. If I'm being frugal, as mm-hmm. I was during this period when I was unemployed, I will do a lot of pieced borders. Mm-hmm. And, you know, use blocks for the borders.
Oh, perfect. Perfect, because that uses up more scraps.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Your book is fantastic. You have
Thank you.
So many great ideas. I mean, just the visual of it, Nancy, is wonderful. Good job.
Thanks. It was a fun project to work on.
Now, what possessed you to do each quilt in three colors? You know, I'm sure I'm not the only one wondering this.
Well, that was the whole concept of the book.
Okay.
I didn't know what I was getting myself into at the time when I started making three variations of each quilt. But what's been fun is it has worked for every quilt that I have designed since then, even though I haven't made them all three ways. I've conceptualized them all three ways and maybe designed them in electric quilt. And those three strategies have worked for every design. So if somebody wants to do a planned color scheme or use pre-cuts or just dig into their scrap bag, it works.
So each quilt is made in one of the three ways of scrappy quilts that you like to work in.
Yeah, that's typically now what I'm doing. I'm not making three variations of everything, just one of them. But for the book, that was the whole concept of the book, so I needed to prove it by making three of everyone.
Okay, so you were just crazy when you came up with that idea. That's what it was all about. Yeah,
yeah, 27 quilts in less than a year.
So, Nancy, for the one that uses pre-cuts, when you work scrappy from a pre-cut, because many lines have so many different fabrics and so many different colors, is there a tip or two to make a successful quilt there?
What I typically do is we'll buy either a jelly roll or a layer cake of those fabrics. But I don't stop there because that's not enough usually to make a quilt. You usually need something for a background, something for some borders, something for your binding and your backing. So I usually buy yardage, 1 or 2 yards of a great background fabric that I want to have so that when I'm ready to make that quilt, when it's time, you know, when it moves me to use those fabrics. Mm-hmm. And then I'll buy maybe half yard cuts of a couple of the medium values and maybe a yard or two of something that would make a great border, so that I have everything I need. And the nice thing about scrap quilts is, so what if there's leftover fabric? It'll go into another quilt at some point, based on the color, perhaps. Maybe then it'll get sorted by color and used on a planned scrappy quilt the next time.
Cool. That's just, that's really good. I like that. It's great advice. That's all in your book?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is, Nancy. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Pat.
And you can visit Nancy Allen at bountifulheirlooms.blogspot.com. And from there, you can find out all the other places she is and check out her book from Martingale called Triple Play Scrap Quilting. This is Pat Sloan with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We are going to take a little break. And when we come back, I have got a segment with the curator from the San Jose Museum of Quilt and Textiles.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, Hello Luscious by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Get quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox. Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I love learning about quilts and textiles, and I love knowing that we have actual quilt museums. There is a quilt museum in San Jose, California. It's actually a quilt and textile museum, and I thought it'd be really great to learn about this museum by having the curator of collections, Nancy Bavor, to come on and tell us about the museum. So welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thank you, Pat. I really appreciate having you having me on your show.
So tell me a little bit about the mission of the museum, since you have like a dual, you know, you have two very specific things, the quilts and the textiles.
Right. Well, first of all, I want to say that people don't realize we are the oldest quilt and textile museum in the U.S.,
having been
founded in 1977. And our mission always has been and still is really to promote the art, craft, and history of quilts and textiles. And we do that through collecting and preserving historic and contemporary quilts and textiles, presenting exhibitions, and then developing programs that are really designed to engage our visitors and our audience in learning how important textiles are in our daily lives.
Now, are you located downtown San Jose?
We are just south of the downtown, and
okay.
We're in an arts area with a couple of museums and some other arts organizations, a theater. So it's a really vibrant area where we are.
Oh, that sounds really nice. So people can hit a couple of different things when they come and visit if they so choose.
Exactly.
So because you have the two things, I mean, obviously, you know, many, many quilts are made with textiles, you know, large majority of them. Do you blend your exhibits or do you do exhibits that are solely quilts and solely textiles?
Well, we do both.
Okay.
We really try to have a balance of quilt only, quilts with other fiber arts and textiles, historic as well as contemporary. And we also have, we try to schedule regular exhibitions of ethnographic textiles because we live in a very ethnically diverse population in the San Francisco Bay Area.
So what might that be? What kind of a textile would you exhibit to meet that criteria?
Well, I think I'm just going to tell you a little bit about what our last year has been like because it really is representative of what we try to do.
Mm-hmm.
We have an exhibition committee that consists of staff and board members, and we meet regularly to plan the exhibition schedule. And we usually work 1 to 2 years in advance before people even come to the museum. And this year we started with an exhibition of folk Indian textiles from the last half of the 20th century. They were from a private collector. But then we had in another gallery the work of a contemporary fiber artist, Junko Sato Pollock. Our current exhibition is a mixture of artworks by contemporary fiber artists as well as contemporary and historic quilts and clothing. And in the fall, we will have 3 centuries of New York beauty quilts from a private collection. And we'll follow that by a mixture of fiber art from Fiber Art International, which is an already organized exhibition. And then lastly, we'll have great art quilts from Quilt National 2013. And so we really try to have a great range of quilts and textiles, ethnographic, contemporary, historic.
So at one time, there are actually multiple exhibits in the museum?
Yes, we have really about 5 exhibition spaces.
Okay.
And we try to have, again, a combination. Two galleries will have one sort of exhibition and 3 of the other. It really depends on the size of the exhibition and how many objects are in that show.
And do you do events based around the exhibit? When a new exhibit comes in, do you do lectures or workshops?
Yes. Yes, and that's part of the charge of the exhibition committee. Although there's a lead curator who organizes the show, we all brainstorm and try and come up with ideas for outreach programs, programs we present in the museum, hands-on activities, activities for children, for adults, for parents to do with children. We really, again, try to offer not only hands-on but presentation-type programs for all of our visitors.
And how long does a normal exhibit run? I mean, is it like 2 or 3 months?
We run on kind of a 12-week cycle. And
okay.
And we have about a week of downtime when we take down a show and put up another one. And we can do that in a week. A lot of museums take a lot longer because we have an incredibly talented group of volunteers who just come in, you know, 3 or 4 days in a row and work really hard taking one show down, putting another one up.
And is the museum closed when you're doing that?
We tell our visitors our gift shop is always open. but yes, when we are working in the galleries, visitors cannot come.
It's right. It's just, I it's think the only time I could make it, you were changing exhibits.
Oh.
That's the
well,
only
we'll
been
plan
able
better to... next time.
Yeah, I'll plan better next time. Yeah, it's like, and I think it was Super Bowl Sunday as well. So, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on. I wasn't able to get there. Now, your website for the museum is sjquiltmuseum.org, so people
That's
can
correct.
Go out there and see what's going on. Tell me about the, the things that people can see when they come in. Do you have, like, a little, like, tip, like an insider tip of what they should do to get the most from the experience?
Well, we often get comments from our visitors who want to see the permanent collection. They want to see old quilts. And we don't always have them up, but what I suggest to all visitors and quilt makers who think they only want to see the old quilts mm-hmm. is that they look at our exhibitions for inspiration. And whether you are an art quilter, traditional, or innovative quilter, I really think it's a good idea to look at what other fiber artists and other quilt makers are doing, mm-hmm. how they use color and contrast and pattern. Or how they approach different subject matter. And I think visitors can look at some of the different techniques and designs used in textiles from around the world, as well as American-made fiber art, just for inspiration.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. It's just, I love seeing work that's different than what I personally do.
Mm-hmm.
It is really, really inspirational. If a person comes in, Nancy, and they have a lot of questions, is there often a curator there, somebody that could talk them through the exhibit a bit?
We have regularly scheduled curatorial tours. There's about two of them per exhibition. Mm-hmm. Groups can make appointments to come in as a group, and we often do that, and the curator will give them a tour. We don't generally do like a behind-the-scenes tour, mm-hmm. except for special groups, again, like American Quilt Study Group or Scholars. But one of my favorite activities and a special benefit that we offer to all of our members is an artist or collector talk in the gallery before each of our opening receptions.
Ooh,
and
neat.
Members love to hear the artists and collectors talk about their work and have an opportunity to ask them questions. And they get real insight into the work that we're exhibiting during these walkthroughs. And everybody just loves them, the artists, collectors, and the members.
Oh, that is really nice. It's really nice to hear the person talk about the work themselves.
Yes, it is.
Now, you have, like on the front page of the website, you have some PDFs about each of the exhibits. It was under latest news. Tell me about those.
Yes, well, we have, they're basically our press releases. They are designed for people like you.
Mm-hmm.
And for the other media, both print and virtual media, so they can just have the basic facts about what's going on when it's going on, and then we try and get as much of our other activities that are going on in the related to that show. We try to get them on that front page as well. So if people want to know what's going on at the museum and they want to find a little bit more about it than just the title of the exhibition, they can go to that press room and get those press releases.
Okay. Now you own. Pieces, the museum owns pieces, and then you also have things come in just for exhibits?
We do. We have a collection of about 1,000 objects, and as curator of collection, that's one of my primary responsibilities is to assure their safekeeping, their care, and we also lend to other museums, and so I oversee that. And
we borrow.
Yeah. So, for example, the current show, some of the objects are from our personal collection, from the museum's collection, rather, but then a lot of them are also loans from artists. And other collectors. And
So that's part of what your job is then being sure that all of that is flowing and keeping track of everything.
Yes, yes.
That's a big job.
It's a constant.
Yeah.
But I enjoy it because I...
Oh, darn.
No, again, my background and my training is primarily quilts. I'm a quilt maker. I'm a quilt historian. And I have to confess to having that somewhat narrow view that, those other textiles that aren't quilts, aren't interesting, and I am so wrong. We have some, just beautiful textiles from all over the world, from China, Japan, Asia, Europe, and they inspire me. So
You might want to cut them up and put them in a quilt. That'd be a no-no, I'm sure.
That's no, we don't do that.
Right? No, don't do that. So when you go to a show yourself, Nancy, when you go to either a museum or an exhibit or just a quilt show, you know, any kind of level of quilt show, what are you personally drawn to?
You know, I am really drawn to the quilts, and the ones I keep coming back to are the ones that surprise me. Mm-hmm. And when I look at quilting shows, I ask myself, have I seen this before, and could I have thought of this? And if the answer is no, I tend to keep coming back to those and trying to figure out what it is that grabs me.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I'm very smitten with a lot of the modern quilts, capital M modern quilts, with all their fresh approach and aesthetic. And so many of the leaders of the Modern Quilt Guild are making work that does surprise me.
Mm-hmm. It's a different style right now, and it's different than what was like considered contemporary quilts or art quilts 15, 20 years ago.
Yes, it's a good mixture of art and innovation, I think, with mm-hmm. a focus on just good design, and I like the lighter aesthetic.
Right, so the exhibits that are up right now, how much longer do they have?
Well, we just opened last week, and the two of them, they run both through July 21st, and curator Deborah Corsini organized this show. It's Milestones, Textiles of Transitions, and it's historic and contemporary quilts, clothing, and other textiles that show the significant roles that textiles have played and continue to play in our daily lives.
So we Nancy.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by BabyLock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts & More magazines. Go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Did you like learning about the museum, San Jose Museum of Quilts and Textiles? We got stopped a little bit, didn't get to end and tell you that when we left the segment. So, you know, out there in the world of quilting, there's all different kinds of design teams. There are people who work by themselves, people who work together, families, people who live close to each other, live far away. Well, I met Mary Andrea Holmes on Twitter. We were, you know, friends there, and then finally met her at one of the trade shows. She works with not just by herself and not just with one sister, but she works with a team of sisters, and they don't even live near each other. So I thought it would be really fabulous as a design team to hear how people can do this. You know, how does their whole process work? Their company name is called Sisters Quilting Trunk. They do a lot of wonderful patterns, and I've got Mary Andrea on the phone. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how
Mary
are
Andrea.
You?
Mary Andrea, yeah.
It's Mary Andrea.
Mary Andrea, how are you?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
I am excited to talk
too.
To you. I know. So tell me, the name, rank, and serial number of your team, you know, because there's a whole group of you, and you were elected to be the one on the phone today. So
that is correct.
Yeah.
I am the oldest, and then there's Cheryl Ann, mm-hmm. and then there are the twins, who are the youngest, and that's Candy and Andy.
Okay. And then you actually have more sisters?
We do. We have a sister, Jerry, and she doesn't even sew buttons. She has to beg her sisters to do this for her because we all tell her she has to learn.
Yes.
I did recently hear that they actually had her doing a couple of stitches on binding for a new quilt that she wanted.
Aha. Uh-huh. There's motivation.
So maybe.
She wanted the quilt.
Yes, she did. So if she wanted it, she had to put the binding on. So she did a couple of stitches. So we went a little bit past beginning.
Well, that's good. There's always hope. There's always
yes,
hope that
absolutely.
You can add a fifth wheel to your team, you know.
In a way.
Yeah, for balance, you know, to the extra
yes.
projects. So do any of you, the four of you that work in the design team, live near each other?
Three of my sisters live, including the one that doesn't, so live about 2.5 to 3 hours from me.
Okay.
And one is in Florida, which is, we're all, the three of us are in Arizona. The mm-hmm. one sister that does our long arm quilting lives in Florida.
Okay. So it's, so you, the three of you, or the, that are closer together by a few hours, do you meet up often?
Not as often as we would like. Most of our work is done through the computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because two
digital.
Of them still work, so that's, they also have full-time jobs.
Ah, so you've got to fit it in while you can.
Absolutely.
So have you always sewn yourself?
I have been sewing since seventh grade. My other sisters, they went a whole different route with their education, and they all have degrees, including doctorate degrees. So I'm the only sewer that I started anyway, the only sewer in the family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And did your mom sew, your grandma?
No, my father's mother did some sewing, and she did show Cheryl a couple of things about using a sewing machine. So she was able to help me out with the sewing machine when I was getting ready to start.
So you had a little bit of family help. So did you learn in home ec?
I did.
Oh, okay.
I took home ec all the way to my senior year.
Wow. Yeah, that's where I learned, too, because I don't have anybody who sews in my family, not at all. So now, okay, what happened with the quilting for you personally? Did you start quilting early on? Because I'm going to assume you made clothing probably in
I did. I made clothing until 1980,
mm-hmm.
and that's when I made my very first quilt, although I called it a blanket, and it was a kit. And we were living in Connecticut, and my sister Candy was expecting her first child.
Ah.
So I made a quilt for this first child, and it is hysterical when I look at it to this day. It's all hand applique, but hand applique to me was using, because I had a garment background from school, mm-hmm. perfect hem stitch on the outside and white thread. They were all a half inch apart. My applique stitches, and you could see everything.
Oh, that's cracking me up.
I was
know.
So proud of it.
Yeah. Did it survive since it was a baby quilt?
It was a baby quilt, and it was a kid, and it was a little boy and girl sitting on a rocking horse.
Mm-hmm. Wow. How fun is that? And did that inspire you to keep quilting?
It did, mainly because the other twin was expecting her child 6 months later.
Uh-huh.
So I then had to make her a blanket, which I did. Then we were transferred, and we moved to California, mm-hmm. where I met Blanche Young.
Ah.
And the whole world just opened up.
So was she teaching in stores near you where you were living?
She actually did teach a class in my home with about, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 other women. Mm-hmm. How that happened, I think I used to belong at that time to the Orange County Quilt Guild. Mm-hmm. And I think through there, a group wanted to get together, and they didn't have a place, so I said, well, you can use my house.
Ah.
And so we took a class on right before they wrote their Flying Geese book, her and her daughter.
Right, right. Very neat. And so
that's
that
how
really
I really
put
got started.
The bug in you.
Pardon me?
That really put the bug in you to keep quilting.
Yes, but I didn't like machine piecing at all. Even though I took the class and I finished two quilts, the first two things that I ever finished that was all completely hand-pieced.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to teach myself how to hand applique.
Ah, without the hem stitch.
Correct. Once I couldn't see the thread and I had to ask somebody how they did it. How did you do that, and where's the thread?
Where's the thread, right.
Exactly.
I love that. I still have people who don't applique at all, you know, who will look at my quilts, the ones that are hand applique.
Uh-huh.
And if they don't know because they've not learned, they're new to it, you can't see the thread when you're doing it properly. So,
correct.
Yeah. Okay. So when did your sisters start quilting after you gave them baby blankets?
Well, they didn't start, honestly, until around 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a brother-in-law. My sister Andy's husband passed away. And she was opening up a quilt store, and her daughter was going to manage it. And she was going to continue to work at her full-time job. Mm-hmm. And my brother-in-law got cancer and became ill, and Andy was still going to open up this quilt store. And then, unfortunately, her daughter was diagnosed with MS, so that wasn't going to happen. There was no way she could manage a quilt store.
Right.
So when my brother-in-law passed away, we just got together during his services, and we made a quilt for a friend of my sister Cheryl, who lived in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided, you know what, let's make a family quilt.
Okay.
So we picked a line of fabric, which was Prairie Paisley by Minnick & Simpson. We picked a design, which was Star, and everybody had to make a block. And when I mean everybody, it was every niece, sister, cousin, aunt that actually never sewed.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to make more than one. And this is the quilt, the red, white, and blue one that's on the poster that you made.
Right, right.
So when they made it, they had to make one for everybody. So there were 13 people involved. So when you made a block, you had to make 13. So
when
we were finished, every one of us got a quilt block. And it
That's incredible.
It was incredible because I would say 10 of them had never sewed before, ever.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually, we actually had to sit with them and have them cut and sew and explain how to sew.
Right.
And what a quarter of an inch seam meant. And that's when we decided, you know, why don't, to help my sister out, fulfill her dream, which wasn't going to come true. She was not going to have a quilt shop yet. That why don't we start a quilt business, and it would be an online business. And it just fell into place.
Wow.
And
that is such a
deep
story.
Yes.
Huh.
And then as we talked, we realized that we all do something different that we enjoy. And my sister Andy had never machined quilt, and she didn't have anything that she really loved. So we went to Houston one year, and this is the truth. And we were not at market because we weren't in the business yet. We didn't even have a permit. Mm-hmm. And we went, and she, without even trying it, went home with a Statler long arm. And she started machine quilting and loved it. So everything we do gets shipped to Florida, and she does all the machine quilting.
So that's her part of the job.
That's
now, how do you divvy up the other parts of the job with the three of you? Do you start a design and then you all jump in on it, or do you each sort of design your own, a mix of that?
We do both because I still don't enjoy machine piecing.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister Candy loves it. So if there's a quilt that one of us has designed that has drawings or applique, and it also has machine piecing, I'm the one that does all the hand applique and hand embroidery. Candy will do all the machine piecing. Mm-hmm. And then on that particular quilt, Cheryl will actually come in and do all the illustrations on the computer and help write the directions. And then we send it to Andy, and Andy does all the machine quilting on it. And then it comes back, and we bind it, and then the process starts, and then it gets made into a pattern.
That's really great. That it is pure teamwork then.
Absolutely.
Everybody's,
it is.
Yeah, you've all got your little chunk. Do you ever do one all on your own for a pattern?
I do. If I'm doing, if I have an idea that I really want it to be completely handwork, then I have to do it myself. And so now I'm down to little ones. My Christmas was the biggest. Now I just, if I'm going to do it, it's going to be a small quilt because there just aren't enough hours in the day to get it done.
Right. When you're doing handwork, it does take a bit more time than.
Yes.
Yeah, then on the machine. So, wow, this is really cool. So now out of that family group, I have to go back to that concept because this whole family making this quilt. I mean, would you recommend doing this for people to do this with their own family? Was it easy? Was it less hard than you thought it would be? Because I'm thinking, what a great thing for family reunions, summer's coming up. You know, people could do that.
I would say it was easy for me because I didn't have to do it all. And because I've been a quilter for so many years, I did it all. So all of a sudden, I don't have to do the piecing that I don't like. Mm-hmm. And when it came time to patterns, once Cheryl retired from being principal of a high school, she was doing all the illustrations, which I was doing all the illustrations before that. So it made my life much easier. And they were getting to be more into it than they were before.
And
And we love our reunions. We're all going to market, and we're going to relax.
You're relaxing at market?
we call it relaxing because we're not doing a booth this year. We have a sister that just had hip replacement.
Okay.
So we decided we're all going to go and relax, and we're not going to put pressure on her to help us set up a booth and take it down. So.
Right, right. Because as most people would say, market, you know, going to any trade show and setting up your booth and working the show is, it's very, very fun. It's very rewarding,
yes, it
but
is.
It's not usually relaxing.
No, and it's work.
It is work. So do you have, just tell us just before the break here, Mary Andre, what the style of your normal work is, like the, you know, your pattern company's work?
We try to cover as many aspects and levels of quilting that we can. We really, our directions that are written are very, very important to us. And we're known for having really good directions for not only the person that can learn by reading the written word, but also visual learners. Our illustrations, we feel, are absolutely wonderful. You can look at our illustrations and understand what's going on. If you don't understand our written word, not that we write bad, but you never know.
Well, a lot of people are visual. They just like to look at the diagrams, particularly if they're more experienced.
Yes.
And I mean,
I have
friends who don't even read patterns. They just want the diagrams now because they can just see a diagram with some, you know, sizing and off they go.
Right.
So. We're going to take a break.
Okay.
And when we come back, I know that I asked you to think about a couple questions people ask you since you have sort of a unique business with Four Sisters. Plus, we're going to talk about some big projects of yours and some techniques. So you're listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
We're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I am talking to Mary Andre Holmes from Sisters Quilting Trunk. This is a team of sisters who work together, a design team, and she's just told us all about them. So, you know, I really want to know, what do people ask you when you're out? You told me a couple really funny things that are commonly asked. One of them is, are you really sisters? What do you say?
I say, yes, we are. And then they want to know who's the oldest and who's the youngest.
Yeah.
So I typically say I'm the youngest.
And yeah, there you go. Yeah. Right. In front of the others, too, right?
Of course I do. And then everybody laughs, and I said, it doesn't matter.
Now, the other thing that you told me that you're asked about, I mean, you must be infamous for this, really.
We are.
That you apparently did a 250-student overnight lockdown to make quilts of valor.
Now, and we did it four times.
Oh, you did it four times.
Yes,
oh, my gosh. This sounds like a wild and crazy thing to try to do. Tell me about it.
Okay. Cheryl was principal of the East Hampton High School on Long Island.
And okay, so this is why it happened, because she was principal.
This is why it happened.
Okay.
So we had just started the business, and she called me one day to say, wouldn't this be wonderful? Mm-hmm. She also has a son who is a Marine, still serving in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yes, but how can we pull it off? So we got together with the other sisters, and we did have a brother-in-law that helped. And this one, all five of the sisters did it, including the one that doesn't sew.
Okay.
We felt she could take care of the food.
Right. Okay. Well, you got to have food.
I am joking, but that's what we told her. So when it came time to even start the project, we figured, you know, we would actually, where we would have it, which would be in the gym, and it would start on a Friday night, and it would end Saturday at lunch.
Oh, okay.
Well, when we realized how many sewing machines and ironing boards that we need and irons,
mm-hmm.
my sister had to have an electrician come in to see if we could get all this to plug into the gym, which the answer was no, we couldn't. And it was going to be expensive. It was a couple of $1,000 to do this. So she notified some of the local townspeople that what we were planning on, and that we needed to raise this money. Well, it instantly happened.
Wow.
She instantly got enough money to have an electrician come in and put enough electrical boxes in to be able to house and have everything running at once. And then...
Now, how many machines did you end up bringing in, sewing machines?
Well, we had children bring in sewing machines if their mothers or grandmothers had them. And I would say, I have pictures, and I'm thinking there was at least 50 sewing machines.
Whew.
Now, you have to remember, none of these children had ever sewn before.
Right. This is why it's so crazy.
We had scissors, yes. So we had scissors, and we had sewing machines coming in, and we had very old sewing machines that now we're trying to learn how to thread, which was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of teachers participated, and we set up big, huge clotheslines in the gym where we were going to hang these tops as they were made.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of had some ideas in mind. And then before this happened, my sister actually got in touch with AccuQuilt, and they so graciously lent us their great big machine for the weekend.
That's
how we were able to do all the cutting, because we couldn't imagine how we were going to control all of these teenagers with rotary cutters and rulers. So everything we designed had to be able to be cut with an AccuQuilt.
Right.
And we had one of the fathers actually was in charge of the AccuQuilt machine, because our arms were giving out after about an hour of turning this. So he was able to do it for us, and he spent the whole night. And cutting strips. And we also did turning 20. We had a template for turning 20.
Okay.
So we were doing that also. So it was strip cutting or turning 20. And then just using, you know, big, you know, 20 by 20 inch squares. Or I should say strip piecing them and then cutting them in quarters and putting them back together again. And the students just
What did they think? What did these students think when they got there? Did they really understand what they were going to be doing for the next 24 hours?
Yes, they did. And they were prepared. Mm-hmm. And I would say most of them, I would say 99% of them brought sleeping bags. A couple of them brought tents, thinking they were sleeping outside. Well, reality set in really quick.
Yeah.
You either slept in the gym with us, or then there were two separate hallways with the gym teachers, girls in one hallway and boys in the other. And then we did have adults that came just at night. Mm-hmm. So that we were all safe. I mean, the school was locked down. It wasn't an issue, but...
Right, right.
You
but
can
it's
only
nice
imagine
to have
teenagers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, they absolutely knew what was happening.
Wow. And how many quilts did you produce during this first event? Do you remember?
I think we finished 37 tops.
Wow.
And it was absolutely amazing to us.
Yeah. That's incredible. And then you decided you would do this again.
We did it again, and we did it 3 more times.
Wow.
And then my sister Cheryl, with a teacher and 2 students, actually went to a big homecoming at Camp Lejeune, mm-hmm. where a lot of the service men and women were coming home, and there was a big parade. And I think we actually, at that time, gave out 25 or 30 completed quilts.
Wow.
They had a total of 1,500, and out of that, we had about, it was either 25 or 30 that were just from these students.
Now, the students must have had a great sense of accomplishment when they were done.
Oh, my gosh. When they were done, of course, we went crazy. We mm-hmm. held it up, and we cheered, and...
Yeah, yeah.
And we did find that the boys were better sewer than the girls, believe it or not.
Wow. Precision.
They were amazed.
Detailed, huh?
I think so. Mm-hmm. And they were the ones that loved to take the machine apart and put it back together again, and the bobbin had to be replaced.
Yeah, yeah.
They took the whole bobbin case apart.
They were the bobbin boys for the night.
Yes.
Put new bobbins
in. Yeah.
Now, if you ever, would you recommend to somebody to do this kind of event now that you've been through it several times?
Absolutely. You can't believe how it brought children together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I could go into detail that would be heartbreaking to hear, but, you know, the students that were being shunned were now part of a team because there were four students were attached to a sewing machine if they were sewing, and they all had to take turns.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And even the outcasts were welcomed into this by the popular kids.
Yeah.
It was amazing to us, totally amazing.
Wow. So, like, if somebody wanted a little bit more detail from you, Mary Andre, could they email you from your website?
Oh, my God. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We can give them all the context they need because fabric was needed. You know, we had to get in touch with fabric manufacturers for donations.
Right.
And we really only had to do that once because from the first time that we got all of this fabric, we had enough fabric that did carry us on for 4 years, for four more times.
Yeah. That's great.
Wonderful, Pat. I mean, I recommend it to everyone, even if they just want to do the pillowcases to try to get our, you know, 1 million pillowcases made.
Exactly.
It would be wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, and I love that idea of the clothesline in the gym. That must have been spectacular.
I have pictures on the blog. I'll have to get more out and blog it again.
Okay. Yeah, blog it again. So let's talk about some of your favorite sort of quilting things that you like to do. When I asked you, you know, what are you passionate about? You know, what parts of the process? And you actually have passion about binding.
Yes.
Tell me why.
Well, I do judge our local county fair.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at absolutely magnificent quilts. And yet when it comes to the binding, everything falls away to the wayside. The bindings aren't done, or they're crooked, or they're not filled with batting, or they're, you know, one side could go from an eighth of an inch to 3/4 of an inch wide binding in the same side. It's like they never took a lesson on binding, and I never thought about it before. I don't know how I learned how to bind. Well, I do know, by trial and error. And people laughing at me, but I learned.
Right.
And I think there should be more emphasis on binding. You've gone through all of this work to make an absolutely magnificent quilt, and what's going to hold it together through washings is the binding.
So, do you have a tip or two that, or you know, that maybe you can give me for people who are like, I want to step up my game. I want some better binding.
Okay. I start with 2 inches, and the reason I start with 2 inches, and it's 2 inch, and then I fold it to 1 inch.
Okay.
Because I want the front of my binding to be the same width, and we'll say it's 1/4 inch. Mm-hmm. When I fold it over to the back, it's also 1/4 inch on the back. And I've got it completely filled with batting.
Okay.
When I get to the corner, when I'm putting on the binding on the front of the quilt before I fold to the back, when I get to a corner, that fold, when you take it out to start the next row, is extremely important, or you don't have a good, actually, point on your four corners.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get 1/4 inch, and there is a little tool that you can purchase, and it's very inexpensive. It's somewhere between 99 cents and $1.50. Mm-hmm. And I know Bernina makes it. I'm not sure if anybody else does. But it kind of guides you where that 1/4 inch is before you finish a row of stitching.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I leave at the 1/4 inch mark. I leave my needle in my fabric, and I just slightly turn. So I'm looking at the very tip where those two sides come together. That point is actually facing me.
Okay.
And I'll lower my stitch level so that I'm going to have tiny, tiny stitches. And I just sew off right to that point and off that point. So now when I take the quilt from underneath the presser foot, cut the thread, and I'm going to flip the binding over and come back down again,
mm-hmm.
everything is perfectly formed for me. And I already have, basically, my angle is already there, my 45-degree angle at the 1/4 inch.
Right.
So it just nicely folds down, and it's perfect when I go to flip it to the backside and do my hand stitching.
Well, that's cool. I think that's really some great info. You know, this has been just wonderful. All your stories, you know, how your family works together, your incredible events you've hosted, and fabulous binding. This has been perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Mary Andre.
My pleasure.
Of the Sisters Quilting Trunk. That's the name of their website. You can just go sistersquiltingtrunk.com. And this is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. You know, I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I want you to be sure to go out and visit our website, allpeoplequilt.com, where we have videos and tutorials, and I'm sure there's a binding one if you want to watch something. You can also come visit me, patsloan.com, and see what I'm up to. Maybe see me when I'm on the road. We'll have a new show next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.